Welcome to the HP Global Employee Ownership Podcast Series. Today we have with us Adam Smith, Division President at HP McClure, and we're going to be talking about how growing up on a dairy farm impacted Adam's career, new initiatives at HP McClure that they've started because of the autonomy given to each division at HP Global, how the diversity of college educations and School of Hard Knocks educations come into play and benefit the company as a whole, and the mentorship from Bob to Adam over the last 16 years. As always, we have with us CEO of HP Global, Bob Whalen, and Senior Vice President of People and Culture, Stacey Baum. Just a few housekeeping items before we get started. We recognize that this podcast is available to the general public, but we just want to say that the views expressed in it are in the context of HP Global and may not apply to broader audiences. With that, Stacey, take it away.
Thanks, Jamie. Adam, Bob, and I are super excited to have you on the podcast with us today, so thank you for joining us.
Appreciate having me.
We'd like to start, I think, just at the beginning, asking you, did you grow up locally here to Central Pennsylvania and close to HP McClure?
Yeah, so I was born and raised about 30 minutes north of Harrisburg, and I was raised on a pretty big dairy farm, at least large for the area. And I would say pretty early on, depending on who you ask in my family in terms of how early this was, but learned a lot of my work ethic came from the farm. So a quick story about that. So I was, again, like determining how old you are when this stuff actually happens. But I think I was in seventh grade. And basically, like sun up to sundown, I was on the farm. I was responsible for, you know, feeding through these conveyors, like silos to conveyors, which is super inefficient relative to now. But felt like I was doing a whole lot of work. And then at the end of the summer, my dad sat me down and he's like, "Well, Adam, I think it's time you start learning some responsibility." And I'm like, I've been working this whole, you know, so that was just my perspective of, but that was just really, you know, I heard a lot of my dad and my uncle talking about how they were responsible for running the farm when they were 12. So that they were younger than me at the time, you know, based on when I was in seventh grade. So, that was just sort of the mindset that they had. And, that I really learned from them over time. And then I got involved in wrestling pretty early. So we're a pretty big wrestling family. And talk about goals and dreams a little bit. But my mom had actually shared this little scroll for me when I was young, where I had like written down some goals that I wanted to do, at least that I thought would be really cool as a fourth grader. But one was in wrestling, and what I wanted to be a state champ. And then I wanted to go to Penn State. And I wanted to major in agriculture engineering, which I didn't really know what that was at the time, but it sounded really cool. So, you know, that journey of, you know, trying to get better as an athlete and, you know, the farm background and just a very supportive family, I think was really pretty critical part of the early stages of my life and that I've kind of rolled into, you know, the work life.
Awesome. So what made you pick Penn State? It sounds like that was a lifelong dream or pretty close to lifelong dream to attend Penn State. What made you ultimately decide to go there?
Yeah, so it had been a goal of mine for a really long time. And Penn State, you know, when you look at, I mean, I had an agriculture background. I don't know that I was really interested in doing farming long term. I did end up doing a minor in ag business. But I had been recruited by some other schools in PA and a couple of smaller Division I schools outside of PA. But when I had just a little bit of interest from Penn State and, you know, did a recruiting trip there, just felt like that was where I needed to be. So I didn't really do a great job of exploring options and, you know, really jumped at the opportunity of going in on really not a lot of money, but just that's what I wanted to be. And felt like I could learn, you know, the most by being in a program like that.
And did you do internships while you were at Penn State studying before your degree, or how did you find HB McClure?
Yeah, so after my freshman year in high school, I was introduced to a guy who was a pretty big supporter of wrestling, and ended up giving me an opportunity to go to a camp at Edinburgh, which put me around, that was the first time I'd really been around a college program and, you know, go down a rabbit trail of strong wrestling family, but a family that had been, didn't really do a lot in the name of postseason credentials. So, my uncle had like one of the strongest, winning percentages in Newport, and but he had never qualified for state, so that was like a big monkey that I had to get off. You know, I felt like I had to get off my back when I was going through high school. And as it turned out, my freshman year I was like undefeated, and then go down to districts and ended up getting upset and didn't qualify. So that was like a pretty big turning point where I meet this guy, Clyde Kressler, and he ends up sending me to this camp, and I got to be around the college wrestlers at Edinburgh, and then the guy that ran it was an Olympian. His name was Lou Roselli, and really was a big part of like the mindset change for me at the time, which was like, really, he had a couple of sayings, like if it won't work unless you do. And some of them are cliche, but at the end of the day, he said something like, you know, someone's got to do it every year, so why not you? So that was a big part of really a shift in my mindset. Like, you know, I can do it, and, you know, kind of showed me where everyone was, and I felt like I was good enough to be that. And you had asked about internships.
Yes.
So had a relationship with Clyde, went through high school and then college, and ended up, Clyde ran a pharmacy management company, and they managed like 18 medicine shops. So I had done some projects with him my last 2 years. So wrestling was pretty intense through the summer with doing other camps and clinics and training and everything like that. But I think it was probably 6 to 8 weeks each summer that I went and worked for the medicine shop, which is actually where I worked right out of college. So I got married 2 months out of college to, you know, my junior high sweetheart, and then started working for Clyde. And then like 11 months in, I had gone to the state tournament with a friend who was competing internationally, and worked out with him, and really felt, I was like, man, I feel like this is something that I should try to figure out. And I went back, and I had to wrestle into the US Open that year. So I wrestled into the US Open, ended up taking third. So that's getting pretty close to making an Olympic team. So I kind of jumped back, and I missed another piece that I had started a non-skilled home healthcare company with my brother-in-law. And that was like a 3 month stint between, you know, November to March, and ended up, whenever I took third at the Open, pulled out of that and went back and coached at Penn State, and really spent 6, 7, and 8 trying to make the Olympic team, and which ended up not working out the way that I wanted, but it was a great opportunity to meet a lot of new people. I traveled, you know, in a couple different countries, and rest in the final Olympic trials, came out in June, and was really, I had considered going back to the farm at that point. And the story that I'll share about my farm, or the farm, is really two things, which one was my the perceived lack of openness that my uncle had at the time, who, again, my uncle was a big part of, I'd say, you know, kind of the hard knocks, and really a great example of strong work ethic, a guy that really worked, you know, 16, 18 hours almost every day of his life. But I had done the ag business minor and came back, and I had experimented and studied some of the calls and options of how you can manage your milk price, which was a really big part of, obviously, the dairy farm. And I think I opened the sentence with my Uncle Brooks, and he said no before finishing the sentence. I'm like, oh, that didn't go very well. So, and then the second piece, which my uncle had never been married. He was talking, I think he was trying to inspire me about the growth possibilities of the farm. And he talked about wanting to buy this farm and that farm. And he said, Adam, you better get ready to work some long bleep hours. And that was really his perspective, was that, like, you just need to be committed, you know, 18 hours of every day. I had just had a daughter and really felt like family was something that I wanted to try to be present. So that was really the two things that kind of made it easy for me at the time, and my dad was really supportive of that, to really just explore my options. So I had met through college a guy who ran a business locally and was kind of mentoring me. I was actually interviewing for a position at his organization and had talked about this guy, you know, young guy with lots of energy who had just bought this company and didn't really know anything about HVAC or plumbing at the time other than, you know, working around the farm. So I wasn't certain that blue collar was something that I was interested in, even though I felt like I was pretty in tune with it. And that's what I grew up with. But I met Bob and really came out of the meeting. Like, I was like, yeah, it seems great. But, you know, I was thinking I was going to go down a different path. But then when he followed up with me and kind of laid out, you know, his vision and sort of what he saw for the company and different paths that I could take, was something that I decided was exciting at the time. So jumped in.
That's great. Bob, so that was back in 2008, not too long after you started and joined HB McClure.
Yeah, so I joined in April 2008, and I think Adam ended up joining, you know, in the fall of 2008. And Adam was really the first person, you know, that I influenced hiring, you know, at the organization. And there was really a couple of things. First of all, had a thesis around in our business, you know, farmers are great. And at HB McClure, you know, we're lucky in that just outside of Harrisburg is basically nothing but farms, you know, for literally miles and miles and miles. And so we have access to a ton of employees that grew up on a family farm or worked on a family farm. And, you know, why we think that that's so great for our business, because they all grow up doing this stuff. You know, they don't call HB McClure to fix their stuff. They fix it themselves. And so they're handy to start with, and they have a work ethic. You know, so certainly, you know, Adam checked those boxes. And then I have a second thesis around, you know, really there's a bunch of different ways that you can show growing up that you have a really strong work ethic. And another one is athletics, particularly college athletics. Because if you get into college athletics, it truly is a job. You know, you are, you know, going to college, but you have this job that you do while you're there, which is around the sport that you're in. And so, you know, Adam fit, you know, both of those things. And he also showed an openness because we approach it a little differently at HB McClure in that we feel, you know, college educated individuals need to know a little bit about what we actually do in the field. Me notwithstanding, you know, I didn't spend one day in the field, so I, you know, have no experience actually doing what we do. But for those that we're developing to lead in our company, we want them to actually have experience doing that. And Adam was willing to actually start in the field. And so he did a short little stint in construction. And everybody can remember, you know, 2008, 2009, we were going into the Great Recession. And so Adam, very quickly, we moved over to the service department and, you know, ended up being a wonderful thing for our company because we, you know, had a young leader that was working from the ground up in the service business, which really, you know, was the first step in Adam, you know, working his way up through our commercial service department, which he, you know, spent, you know, a good part of the next decade, you know, in that department in various roles.
So Adam, do you want to talk to us a little bit about that journey? During your career at HB McClure, starting in service and what you learned along the way?
Sure. Yeah, I think I'll start in construction because, you know, that, and it ended up only being a couple of months in construction. You know, essentially, I think the downturn was hitting as I was coming in. But it really showed me a lot about what our people do. So, I mean, and I was waking up, and I wasn't like a stranger waking up early, but, you know, to do it as as a profession to wake up at 4 or 4:30 to be on site by 6, and you know, just a very structured situation. But I would say we had a lot of people in the field who were very open, you know, to a lot of the questions that I asked, which, you know, I think is annoying to some people, but just a way that I kind of learned. And that was probably true whenever I came into the office as well. But they were super open to that. So I was able to pick up a lot around sheet metal, around plumbing, and just understanding what our people go through every day and how they're interacting with the other trades and things like that, and really what it looks like to go from getting something out of the ground to the finishes. So that was really exciting. I felt like I was able to kind of see a lot in a short period of time. That was exciting for me. And then when I switched to service, had a little bit of a different experience with just some of the folks that I ended up with that, you know, I think what I learned through coaching and I learned through wrestling and what I learned through business is you can learn a lot through, you know, good leaders and bad leaders, and you can learn a lot through good experiences and bad experiences. So I think there's some things that I took, you know, from, you know, both sides of that early on that I think helped me long term. But I got into doing maintenance and small projects and some service work as well, which really showed me the stressors that our techs deal with. Is, you know, when you're troubleshooting something with a client over your shoulder, like, it's just a different type of pressure, right? So I think that was about 18 months, I think, that I spent in service, so about 2 years total, and ended up having an opportunity to be an account manager in service, which at the time our account managers, I mean, service was, you know, $3-4 million business. And so the account managers kind of did a little bit of everything. So they sold new maintenance and did, you know, quoting of repair replacements and, you know, did the client relationship side. And pretty quickly started going down a path of sales leadership where we kind of adjusted the approach to have a new business development focused on creating new relationships and new opportunities for preventive maintenance, and then had inside sales and client managers as well. So a couple of years into the account management, I had the opportunity for sales leadership, and then a couple of years after that, had an opportunity to lead service. And part of it was acquisitions, and part of it was strong organic growth, but ended up having a service business that in a couple of years' time was around 12 million, I think, in that like 2016, 2017 timeframe. So it was pretty exciting to be a part of that. And I think another thing that happened in 2015 was had an opportunity to go back to school. So I went back to Villanova through an EMBA program. And it was just a really exciting time because we had become employee owned in 2010. We had gone down this path of doing some asset purchase agreements, like small acquisitions that weren't like super tangible in terms of like there were no physical brick and mortar of the companies. But I think we did the first one in 2013, which was IT Landis, but we had already done Henry Mechanical out of Lancaster, which got us into refrigeration in 2012, I believe. And then in 2015 had an opportunity to, we acquired Green Mechanical, which was a couple of trucks and two techs and then another employee. And that was like right around the time when I, you know, started leading service. We did this acquisition, we started open book management. So it was like starting to educate our people on, you know, P&Ls and the different things that go into running a business. So then I, through that process, it was just really great timing because it was like, I got to practice all this stuff. And, you know, we had another leader at the time that we were kind of co-leading service. So we kind of were able to bounce a lot of things off. And it was just pretty exciting through that really 2 years to just learn a ton about business. And another thing that I really, you know, growing up on a farm, the market, I didn't really, like, I knew what it was, but I didn't really understand how everything worked. And I, you know, I still have things to learn there, but I really started to get a pretty good understanding of, you know, how companies get valued and the different drivers of, you know, the flow of all, you know, financials. That was pretty exciting for me at the time. So that's really what led, I guess, you know, led service for the next, I think, 5 or 6 years, and talk about some other transitions within the organization, just of how HB has kind of evolved. So I think whenever I started, we were under 30 million. It was HB McClure at the time was commercial and residential. And I'm not sure on headcount at the time, but maybe 130.
When we did the ESOP for the first time in 2010, I think we were right around 150, you know, employees. And before the recession it hit, probably we're at a high of, you know, 175 employees, you know, or so.
So in 2017, finished school, and then that was right around the time where we decided to form HB Global. And you just talk about different things in your life that happen that, you know, it just depends on how you respond to things, of whether you view them positively or negatively. And I think as I've seen changes through service, with people leave or people, you know, retire, it creates opportunity for other people. And that's something that became exciting about the ESOP, which, number one, a big part of the ESOP is growth. So with growth comes different opportunities. And then as we formed HB Global, essentially the leadership team from HB McClure formed HB Global, which created opportunities for, you know, new leaders to come in and lead HB McClure, which is really what ended up giving me an opportunity to lead HB a couple of years later. So viewing changes like that at times, you know, can be unsettling for some. And, you know, as long as you're open-minded to learning and to, you know, figuring things out, they can be really exciting for growth for others. And that was, you know, I was a benefactor of that.
Adam, that's a really great message. I think mindset's so important. And, you know, sometimes there is a fear of the unknown. So being able to balance that and keep an open mind and be excited and have a vision for the future is something that I think a lot of our leaders have to have.
Yeah. And I think I probably get made fun of for one of my things that I respond quite a bit, which is, you know, hey, how you doing? Well, it's the best day ever. And it's not so much that every day is the best day ever, but it's just really a mindset of how you're going to approach every day. Right. So I think, you know, back to times in wrestling where we have 5 o'clock workouts and, you know, I'm showing up and you just find a way to have fun with that journey. Right. And whether it's, you know, you're joking around early in the morning, you're just finding ways to bring energy to people. I think that's something that's pretty exciting. And at the end of the day, it is super contagious. Just as the opposite is contagious. If you're showing up at 5 a.m. and you're just, you know, whining about why you have to be there. And I talk about that a lot with the kids that I coach, is like the language you're using when you talk about your life and what you're doing just really is impactful to really what your performance is and really how much people enjoy being around you as well. So, you know, the people that are talking about learning and getting better and just being grateful for the opportunities versus the people that are whining about a coach or whining about, you know, something that has, you know, kind of wronged them in some way. It's just a very different perspective.
Bob, so I know you shared earlier how you viewed Adam coming in to the business and some of the things that you think matter long-term for some of those strategic talent hires. How have you stayed involved in Adam's journey as a mentor?
Well, you know, I think sometimes, you know, people don't realize how much fun it is for leaders to be mentors. And so Adam went out of his way very early on in his career just to check in with me on a regular basis, which in essence evolved into, you know, a mentor-mentee relationship where we had regular conversations, and we have had them for the last 16 years. And so it's a ton of fun, you know, when you act as a mentor to somebody you know, first of all, I didn't say to Adam, you know, I'm going to be your mentor. You know, he actively, you know, made that happen through his actions. But it's a lot of fun for a mentor just to watch the growth and development and just have a small piece in that. You know, I would never take credit for, you know, Adam's development. I'm just one little piece of him developing. But it's fun when you're in a situation where you can just give your perspective, you know, on things. You know, and I go out of my way, you know, when I'm mentoring, you know, folks, is really say, hey, look, I'm just going to tell you what I think. You know, I'm not telling you to do this. I'm not telling you where it fits into how you use it, you know, as a leader for yourself or where you're going. I'm just going to tell you, like, kind of how I view it. You know, and so many of the things about Adam and I align, you know, so some of the things, you know, like, I have a what Adam was just talking about, you know, relative to how you approach things. You know, I have all kinds of sayings that, you know, that I do relative to that, you know, to the SEALs say, embrace the suck. You know, it's part, you know, of their mantra about really embracing things that are hard and, you know, look at it as a positive, you know, that you're going through this tough time. You know, and so there's some of that. But then Adam is very different from me in some other respects. And I think, you know, that's an important part of business around the diversity. You know, I talked about earlier, you know, about, you know, bringing Adam in. You know, one of the things that was very specific about bringing some, you know, college graduates into our company very early on so they could develop and become leaders. But I think what's, you know, if you just hear one side of that story, the other side of the story is we also have a career path that we think is just as important for leaders that come in from the School of Hard Knocks and start as a helper in the field and work their way up. And we really embrace the diversity of having both of those career paths being part. And if you look at the leaders in our company, we have a mix of those types of leaders in our organization, and we actually don't want one over the other. We believe the diversity of having both is so important to what we do. And, you know, you think about Adam starting, you know, one of the most important things he got, you know, for that 3 months in construction is he got to work alongside of those folks and, you know, how they think about the world and what they're going through. And some of them will do that for the rest of their career. And they love what they do. And that's what they want to be doing. And it's important to see, you know, the world through their eyes too. And so I think that those are all the things, you know, that you get out of the mentor, you know, mentee relationship. And what led Adam to us was Bob Ortenzio, who I would say is one of the 3, 4, 5, you know, most important mentors in my life. And certainly from a business perspective, you know, one of the most important mentors I've had. So there's all these connections that happen from some of this. And, you know, the one thing I would want to convey is it's fun being a mentor. You appreciate being asked to be a mentor and spending the time. And I learn every bit as much, you know, from the people that I'm lucky enough to mentor, you know, than they're learning from me.
So we've talked a little bit about the drive and the hard work that goes into the career and leadership. We haven't talked at all about how cultural alignment matters. So I think that's something that I'm interested in hearing both of your perspectives of how you've worked together towards making sure culture stays really present at HB McClure.
Sure. Yeah, I'll take it. And I mean, I've seen Bob's vision kind of evolve over time as well since 2008. But I think since we became employee owned, I think that was really the initial piece where people have always been important at HB McClure. And I think that was something that I saw, you know, in speaking with Bob the first time when I had met him and hearing him talk about the organization. That's always been there, but then that's just evolved and it just looks a little bit different. So since we became employee owned, I think it just became a lot more clear what what, this is just my perspective of what Bob was trying to accomplish. And, you know, moving from, hey, this is a way to transact, you know, and transition the company a little bit more efficiently to something that really just drives the organization. I think it drives Bob personally. And then, it, you know, I think I'm incredibly aligned with that, and which is not just being employee owned, but just building out employee ownership and the really important components that I think are involved with employee ownership, which is really just people who take responsibility for getting better and for, you know, delivering a great experience to clients.
And coworkers,
yes. And so that's driven really HPE to be more employee focused. So I think from my perspective, like, people are so important, and you can say you're focused on your people, you can say you're employee owned, but until you actually do it and be very disciplined about doing it every single day, that's what I think is a big part of what we're trying to accomplish. So I'd say people and growth are two of our core values that, you know, incredibly aligned with. And then in terms of grit, I think that's something that, you know, resonates with me a ton from a lot of my experiences, but then it's something that I saw very early that our people in the field and in the office deal with on a very regular basis. So I think it's something where it looks a lot different, right? So you show up on a roof and your boots are melting to the roof because it's, you know, 100 plus degrees, or it's, you know, on the other side is, you know, when you're showing up in a building that's not, you know, climate controlled in construction and it's, you know, in the teens or single digits. Like, it takes a different mindset to get through that. For the office, what I think that means, and for the people that, you know, I work with more day to day now, it's just around doing the things every day that you know you have to do, but you don't always feel like doing them. And those are the folks that I've tried to surround myself with, and that I, when we're recruiting and hiring, those are the people that I think really make, you know, a business like ours work really well. So I didn't talk about trust. And I would say, you know, number one, that's our foundational core value, but it's really kind of, well, not kind of, that's what has kept me around. So, you know, I've observed that Bob, you know, continues to do what he says he's going to do for our people. And the things that he talks about with me, it's a very similar situation. So that's something that I've taken and really tried to work with the people that I'm leading and working with. So from a values perspective, highly aligned, and from a vision perspective, I think for me, it's like, it's been something that I've always taken pride in, is trying to be a part of something special, right? And doing something that not everyone can do. And I think that when I look at HB, even in the early stages, like where Bob was trying to take the organization, I felt like that's what we were trying to do. And that's something that I'm excited for from a future perspective is, you know, I think we really are doing something special for our people. I think we deliver, you know, great experiences to our clients. And I really think we're doing something special for people who wouldn't have opportunities, you know, from an advancement perspective and even from a wealth perspective, you know, otherwise.
Great. Have anything to add there?
Well, I just think what Adam just articulated is, you know, so close to my reality. Mm-hmm. You know, we did the ESOP initially as a way to make the transition, you know, as effectively as we could. It really was about that at first, but it's evolved into something, you know, so much more. And, you know, we talk about finding your why. You know, that happened over time to where now, you know, I'm maniacally focused, you know, on creating value, you know, for our employees. And at the same time, we want this to be a great place to work. And I think it's an integral part of that. You know, when everybody's engaged in not only, you know, helping themselves, but helping all their other teammates, you know, it just makes for, you know, such a better place you know, to be part of, and makes for a great place to be employed. And so, you know, now that we're, you know, 15, 16 years into this journey, you know, you can really look back and see that these things are an evolution. You know, they take time, and, you know, over time, it's just really evolved, you know, into, you know, we're working to do something great. And I think we're well on our way, you know, to doing that, you know, for our employee base. And I think one of the most important things is that you have leaders, you know, that are fully engaged in that vision.
Right.
You know, if your leadership is not fully engaged in your vision, it's not going to play out in the behaviors. And so the closer we are aligned with our leaders to what we're trying to accomplish, the more likely, you know, we are to accomplish it. And I think we're well, you know, on our way. And some of those leaders are evolving. You know, some of it's not where they, we've acquired businesses that come from a very different spot. So we don't just snap our fingers. Okay, you're employee owned now and all behaviors change and how you look at the world changes. It's something that happens, you know, over time. And I think we give that grace, you know, to our leaders to make that change. And then I think, you know, one of the big things that we're focusing on is that all 1,700 of our employee owners, you know, have agency, you know, to make this a great place to work, you know, and we all need to take that responsibility and that agency to make it happen. And I'm, you know, I watch it, you know, almost on a daily basis, you know, happen. And it's so exciting. And we're having so much fun doing. I hope everybody else is having as much fun, you know, going through this journey as I am.
Adam, I know we talked about the evolution and the importance of our relationships for you. How have you managed balancing home life and a growing career with your family?
Yeah, it's a fun question. So I had mentioned when I was still competing is when we, you know, I had our first kid. So she's actually graduating, going to college this year, but she's our oldest, and we have two boys, two girls. And I think that's something that, you know, I've observed, you know, Bob and some other leaders in our organization that always find a way to manage, you know, work life. And I'll just call it integration because it's not really one or the other. So I think, you know, for me, it's really important to show up at work and at family and community in the same way. And HB has given me the opportunity that it's really easy to do that. And, you know, I don't miss a lot with my kids. I'm still able to do coaching. And, you know, I think the coaching piece is a big part of my life where, you know, it's a great way for me to give back. But then, you know, over time and as my kids have kind of gotten older, I've kind of moved into some different opportunities within leadership on serving on different boards within wrestling leagues. And then that's kind of evolved to moving onto like the board of the Y, and there's a foundation I'm involved with in my alma mater for Newport as well. And I think being able to give back in those different ways has been another big part of, you know, where I'm trying to show up and, you know, what I'm interested in showing my kids. And I think HB McClure has given me those opportunities where, and Paul's been fully supportive with my, you know, involvement with the Y and with other community, you know, things that I get involved with.
So another question for you, Adam, is just the initiatives you've focused on at HB McClure to help grow your team there. So I know you recently opened a new training center and you have a Voice of the Field program. Can you talk to us a little bit about those initiatives, why they're important to you and what they've done for your team at HB?
Sure. Yeah. And I think, so we started, you know, what is now the Voice of the Field, it's been over 2 years now. And really the idea of the Voice of the Field came from someone on our leadership team that, you know, we're having all these conversations about, hey, how are these things going to impact our people with really no direct input from them.
Right.
right? So we say we're employee focused, but then we're making all these decisions about them with really, you know, what we think is, you know, great input being ours, but not really knowing for sure. So that's where it started. And then it just kind of evolved into this thing where we were taking volunteers from all different parts of our business. And the idea was that we're going to meet with these field members with the core purpose of sharing information and then just trying to get a little bit better. And I think the challenge with it early on and that we had to be disciplined about was just making sure it wasn't like idle chatter. Like, so we weren't just showing up to complain either way. Like, we weren't complaining about the field and the field wasn't complaining about us. But it was just about, you know, let's bring opportunities around, you know, challenges that you're facing or opportunities that you think can help us get better as an organization. So we started that process with just three volunteers and limited it really to three. Very quickly went to six, understanding that, you know, jobs happen, work happens. So you show up with one person, you still get input, but you're trying to get kind of a collective voice. And what it has evolved to now is that we have 11 people that meet us monthly. And it's really, and I say this, that it's one of the most exciting conversations that we have every month or that I feel like we have. And I think the reason is like the people that are showing up in those meetings, like they're really interested in, you know, providing a voice to make us better. So that's been super exciting. And then, you know, that leads into really the next thing that you had asked about, which is our tech center. So the tech center really evolved from the voice of the field. And it was just this idea of, you know, hey, we just really need to be better at, you know, training and, you know, we don't have enough technical XYZ. So we ended up deciding that we're going to commit a space in our warehouse, which, you know, took, you know, bringing some people along because it condensed our sheet metal shop. And, you know, I would say that the guy that runs our sheet metal shop was, you know, once I explained it, the why behind, you know, what we were trying to accomplish, he was really open to it. So, that project was, you know, really a long one, but I mean, it was about a year and a half in the making. And the whole idea around the tech center is that we're trying to create an opportunity where you can literally go in as whether you're an apprentice or a skilled technician or a foreman and go in and do hands-on training, you know, to get better at what you're doing. And I think what our people need to be open with, which they have been very open, it's just, you know, it doesn't happen overnight. So we're not just going to be world-class at technical training tomorrow. But there's an incredible amount of energy around it. We have a person that's going to be taking over from Mike Snyder as the leader of technical training and development. And he is clearly passionate about technical training. And I think he really knows what we do. And he's really excited about, you know, building different modules and just figuring out, you know, if that is all we need to do, or, you know, if not that, then what else? And then we're also, the goal is that we get to the spot where we can do skills-based assessments, you know, from a recruiting perspective, from a new hire perspective, and then the whole way throughout where, you know, where every field employee has a development plan for wherever they want to go in their life, you know, whether they want to, you know, be a service tech for the next 30 years or whether, you know, they want to move into something different. We want to create those opportunities. And I think we're going down a really good path, but, you know, I'll say that it's an evolution and we're just, you know, continuing to make it better. So those are two things that, you know, I think our organization is pretty passionate about in terms of training and then just employee voice. And with technology, I think, certainly that's evolving, you know, the way we think and the way we work, but it's something that's core to who we are. And I think it's been a really, there's been a lot of energy from our field. And, you know, I'll say a couple of things is like, I guess you could view that this is good or bad, but, you know, I took it as being a positive thing, which is, you know, one of our field employees said, you know, if you want something done, you got to take it to voice of the field. So I don't know that is unanimously great for our organization. I want our organization to be that way, for people to feel that way across the board. But it is showing that people are seeing that we're listening and they're feeling heard and they're actually doing it. So pretty excited about where we're at, really, with both the Tech Center and the Voice of the Field.
Very exciting, and a lot of great work to your team.
I appreciate it.
Stacey, can I just say, I think the most important thing about those two initiatives at H.B. McClure is that they came from H.B. McClure. This was not dictated by H.B. Global. This is not H.B. Global said, you need to do these things. These are things that they took the initiative at H.B. McClure to make their business better. And, you know, I would use those as examples of exactly what this business is about. And we talk a lot about our highly autonomous model of our businesses, taking responsibility for the business. And that's an example, you know, that it's played out in real life. And we hope we create that environment, you know, where our businesses will take that initiative and make them better. And I can tell you the next step of that is the leaders of our business getting together and talking about things that are working and not working within their business. And there's energy that's built, you know, around these things. There's a lot of independent training things that are going on in our divisions right now that we're now starting to talk and say, what's working, what's not working, you know, how do we get better at what we do? And that's the thing, you know, that's most exciting for me to see, because it's really, truly this model playing out of why that is going to make us a great business and not, you know, one person at the top that thinks he's the smartest in the world, you know, telling everybody the things that we're going to do out there, because it doesn't work.
Well, Adam, Bob, thank you for the discussion today. I think it was really great, and appreciate you, Adam.
Thank you. Very much appreciate it.
Thank you.
If you have questions for Bob, we'd love to hear them and answer them in future podcasts. Feel free to submit them to eopodcast@hb-global.com, and we'll see you next time.